So throughout the campaign and really throughout the Bush administration, the debate over torture tactics used for detainees both in Afghanistan and Iraq and detainees at Guantanamo Bay, where both the Barack Obama and John McCain came out strongly to close Guantanamo Bay. That debate is moot if you consider this fact. The United States holds at least 25,000 prisoners in so-called long-term solitary confinement across the country in supermax prisons. They're confined for at least 23 hours per day. Are these called torture? Are these detainees and their treatment called torture? Well, the debate doesn't really exist, but maybe it should. We're joined by Dr. Atul Gawande, who's a surgeon and writer for The New Yorker. He's agreed to talk with us from his office before he heads into surgery this morning. Busy day, doctor.
For having me on.
Yes, indeed. Well, you have a really an amazing piece in The New Yorker this week that's all about, first of all, the scientific data on the use of 23-hour-a-day solitary confinement in detention, which is routinely done in the United States, of tens of thousands of people, and just your own thoughts as a doctor on whether this constitutes torture. How did you calculate whether solitary confinement in supermax prisons could be considered torture?
Well, partly it was by trying to look at what the experience is, both in some scientific studies and of hostages and even prisoners of war like John McCain. What you see is that we've been learning over the last few decades that to exist as a normal human being requires interaction with people, and we've seen it in monkey studies. We've seen it when we've tried to adjust to how astronauts in space survive, especially on their own. It's turned out that radio and video connection to other human beings is really crucial for them to maintain their sanity. And then the experience of hostages and POWs has been that they find the torture of long-term solitary confinement, years, like John McCain spent 2.5 years in isolation, that can be worse to them than their physical damage of bones broken and other kinds of physical torture.
Now, of course, cynics in the audience might say, well, hey, John McCain, he did all right. He ran for president, even though he was in solitary confinement. How permanent was the impact of that? And secondly, how does this policy of supermax solitary confinement proliferate in our prison system?
So the permanence issue, I started in an interest in this partly out of looking at John McCain when he ran, and it is striking that the data doesn't show that people necessarily have permanent effects that leave them disabled in some way mentally or anything like that, and John McCain is a great example of that. What you find over and over is that people who experience solitary confinement experience it as torture. You see that the brain slows down, and EEG studies taken weeks after solitary confinement for long periods show changes that are as severe as people who've had brain damage from abuse.
And in some of the animal studies, animals wouldn't eat and just basically starved themselves after solitary confinement in some of the most striking animal studies you cite.
That's right. So if you confine people long enough, and then they also have either they're very young, so you're confining juveniles to those kinds of the equivalent of juveniles to those circumstances, that can lead to real permanent damage in their social abilities. But then also look at a case of someone who was kept in solitary confinement in Illinois for 14 and a half years, basically from the age of 18 to the age of 33, and that kind of loss of your just social abilities means that they've lost the maturing of the ability to function in normal society. And so now we've freed this person who can't handle the world.
Well, before we go, how does this policy proliferate, and what's to be done to sort out who's a physical danger to other inmates and who's just in solitary as a kind of a default practice?
Well, it's proliferated as an interesting finding as a consequence of our own generation. Before the 80s, we had maybe a few hundred people in solitary confinement, and we've made it our norm. And this isn't just in, a few states that we can all look down upon. I mean, that's 10% of the prisoners in Maine. We have supermax prisons here in Massachusetts, where I am, 8% of the prisoners in New York State. All over, we've made this our norm. I think that's contributed to our expectation that in Guantanamo, we could apply these kinds of conditions to foreign prisoners, and then we've been baffled at why other people have reacted to it. What we can do differently is there is experience, for example, in Britain, which stopped using solitary confinement after finding it made violence worse with IRA prisoners. They were able to establish ways to begin reducing prison violence, which is the main reason that, that people want to put people in solitary confinement. There's also a good third to a half who are in solitary confinement for smaller causes. It's merely an administrative decision to put them in solitary confinement. And there have been long recommendations from people in both parties that needs to change.
Well, you're a doctor, not a lawyer, but nevertheless, do you think it passes the test of cruel and unusual punishment, supermax solitary confinement?
I'm definitely not a lawyer, but I think it does. When we simply ask at the level of, is this straightforwardly harmful to people in ways that cause damage to them, lasting damage and pain that's at a level that is like breaking their arm, putting people in solitary confinement for years on end is.
Well, Dr. Atul Gawande, thanks so much for joining us. Good luck at surgery this morning. You have a busy day ahead of you. He joined us from his office in Boston to talk about his article in the current New Yorker, Hellhole, about the norm of housing inmates, 25,000 or more, in U.S. prisons in 23-hour solitary confinement. Thank you, doctor.
Thank you.